Welcome back to the Paranormal Girl Podcast. I am your host, Kristen. Today's guest is a Sasquatch researcher who currently works as a private investigator and brings his experience with law enforcement and evidence into his Bigfoot work. He has collected quite a few stories and pieces of evidence along the way, a few of which we will be reviewing on today's show. Before I introduce him and play our chat for you guys, thank you to everyone who tuned in to the fourth episode of Beer, Booze, and Boogeymen. We discussed communications with the other side, and it was excellent. We heard some incredible caller stories and write-ins. I can't thank you guys enough for participating and sharing your stories. It's what the show is about. You guys make the show exciting and interesting. The other hosts and myself are just your conduit to share your experiences in any way that makes you comfortable as we continue growing this 3B community. For anyone who has not yet had an opportunity to share your story, perhaps you're interested in the paranormal or UFOs or Bigfoot, but alas, have not experienced any of it yourself, but dang it, you want to be a part of the conversation, I think we've got you covered. Our fifth episode will stream June 1st, 4:30 p.m. Pacific. We will be channeling our inner Art Bell on this one. Truth or Trash is the name of the game here. AB fans will know what I am talking about. Basically, there will be no paranormal stories told this evening. However, there will be some of the craziest stories you have ever heard. Hopefully, it will all come down to you, the listener, to call into the program with either the craziest thing that has ever honestly taken place in your life or the greatest yarn you will ever spin. The audience will then decide if the story you told is truth or trash. And then, of course, the caller will confirm. It is gonna be a fun one, you guys, and an opportunity for more folks to participate. Join us June 1st, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on YouTube. And to make it easier for you, simply follow the link at the top of the show notes. It takes you right to the live page so you can click to be notified. We'll see you there. My guest has a background in law enforcement with over 40 years' experience with forensic evidence. He applies the attention to detail and investigatory skills he has acquired along the way to his search for Sasquatch, and in so doing, has collected numerous pieces of visual evidence. His years of personal experiences and encounters, the evidence he has accrued, and his native heritage and knowledge of the history of Cherokee relationships with the Tsul'kalu have moved his once flesh-and-blood, ape-only opinion to where he currently stands on the Bigfoot phenomenon today. Please enjoy my conversation with Bigfoot researcher and investigator Richard Stewart Taylor.
I do private investigations, you know, now. My first career was law enforcement, so I naturally insulate myself to undesirables. I'll leave it at that. I'm not into a lot of controversial stuff as a private investigator, but there are people you don't want anything to do with, if that makes sense. And, you know, shame on them if they ever try to hurt me. I'm pretty well adept to defending myself. You know, I'll make them pay a price for sure.
Yeah. So you still do private investigating now?
Yes, ma'am. I work for a nationwide engineering company. I was an arson investigator with the city of Houston. Fire, EMS, and investigative law enforcement experience. And I still do fire and explosion investigations for major insurance concerns. I'm a qualified expert witness in that field, both in federal, state, and local courts. And I love it so much, Kristen, that I still like doing it. You know, I do it part-time. Yeah. It's needed, but I love it. You know, I love the money too. They pay me well.
Well, it's just
watching blow money. Yeah. Good blow money. Yeah. You know,
so. Well, it just sounds like such an exciting career, like that, that would be something I can imagine someone just falling in love with and not wanting to stop. Yeah. Like, just so interesting, and it's ongoing. People need that kind of service.
Oh yeah, there's fire and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but yes, I totally agree.
Yeah, well, and then it does give you, like you said, like the money and the time. I'm assuming, like, the flexibility a bit to do the squatching. All of the field investigating that you do. Like, I was poring over your Facebook the other day. Okay.
Yes.
And
yes, ma'am.
I don't think I've met anyone, maybe like the top peeps in the field, that is as busy and as active. You're always doing something. You're always at a convention. You're always out in the field. It's impressive. It's really impressive.
Well,
and, you get a lot of evidence.
Yes, I've been blessed with that. I'm not a religious man, but I am a spiritual man. I don't like religion, or at least the established. But this whole phenomenon is tied into what I've experienced. There's spiritual connections there. Call it paranormal. You know, when you understand these subjects as well as I do. I don't worship them, but I do respect them. I do converse with them on occasion. I'm very guarded there because there's doors you don't want to open. Early in my life, with activity that was going to send me to prison or to the grave, you know, I had connections and opened some doors that I had no business opening. And it was not for my own good. And just by the grace of the Creator's heart, He turned me around, you know. So, you know, when people get into some of the paranormal, I don't want to go there on some things. But there are other paranormal doors that are there. They exist. They're all around us. And I believe these subjects are both physical. They stink. They leave footprints. They break trees and so on. But they do things that are not physically possible,
okay,
such as cloaking. Well, I say not physically possible. Yeah, the military, you know, is interested in some of that, but they do some very amazing things, far beyond what we can do, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And they know my heart. They know I'm not out there to forsake merchandise or put them in any peril. And they go out of their way sometimes to engage. And it freaks some people out. I've been with some people where I'm watching one and I say, let's get closer. And the person with me has no. I should have sent you this one video. I was in southern Missouri just last year. I was sitting along a sandbar with a bunch of people. And we were watching what people would call paranormal. Across the creek was orbs. Okay. People said, oh, that's just a star. They said, no, look at the tree line. Stars aren't moving, you know, and there were little orbs floating through the trees, which a lot of people associate with Bigfoot activity. I mean, you've got a lot of witnesses that mention, and it even goes back to Native Americans talking about lights in the forest. And I was sitting there, and sure enough, I can't turn it on and off, but there are times I sense them and I know where they are. Okay. It's just, it comes. I can't sit there and make it happen, but it does happen. And when it happens, I know it, you know, and I'm sitting in this chair and I start getting vibes. They're behind us, which they do. They'll flank you. They'll sneak up behind you. They do tactical activity. So I turn around, and when I turn around, I see what people in our industry call eye shine or eye glow. And a lot of the dissers say, oh, that's just a reflection. You can see it in deer and cats and yada, yada, yada. You got to have ambient light to reflect something. When you're in pitch dark and you're seeing two lights in the brush, that's luminescent. That's producing light. And I've seen it enough where I won't argue with them. That's fine if you don't want to believe it. But yeah, their eyes do glow. And when I looked over my shoulder, I saw one, okay, one eye glow, and then I seen it disappear. Well, they side peeked, you know, they side peeked around the tree. So I'm thinking, okay, exactly where are they? You know, so I very casually, and I've got people sitting with me in folding chairs. There's about six or eight of us out there. One of the things I don't do is say, hey, we got one, you know, over there. No. You point them out and they're gone, you know. So I casually get my thermal and I'm kind of sitting there scanning other places. And then I go turn that back to where I saw the eye glow or eye shine. And sure enough, there's one hunkered down behind this tree watching it, you know. So I watch it for a while. Yeah, I could send you those pictures too. I don't put everything I get, you know, out on the internet. I hold back a lot of stuff. And so I watched them for a while, you know. Mm-hmm. And finally, we got ready to move from that location. And as we were getting up and leaving down this road, it was a trail, actually. One of the guys that I was with, I said, and I can send you this video. It's funny. I go, there's one behind us. There's one behind us. And when I did, they understand the spoken language. They understand English. And I've had them understand Cherokee. My grandmother was full blood Cherokee. My grandfather was mixed blood. I am a registered mixed blood tribal member of the Cherokee Nation. I'm very proud of my native lineage, but I'm equally proud of my Scots, Irish, Dutch, and German. It's who I am. I mean, I can't be anybody but me. The second time I pointed this subject out, that subject, and I've got a good audio and thermal of him cutting out of, you know, through the brush, retreating. And the other guy is freaking out because he can hear the big heavy footfalls and all of the racket as this subject's leaving. And I said, he went that way. And we started walking. And he hadn't walked five steps. He goes, Rick, you got five more feet, then you're on your own. He didn't want to follow it, you know. And I understand that. I've had that happen several times where you are crazy. No, I'm not going any. You know, it tickles me. They go out to look for activity, and when it comes upon them, they freak out and overload it, you know.
It could be just such an overwhelming experience. Like that's so funny you see that. I think a lot more people go out there. Okay, I want to run into one. I want to see one. I want to get right up close and just pluck the hair out of their little buns. And you know, should you ever find yourself in close proximity like that with an opportunity to do so, I think quite a few people would kind of, you know, get a little 180 on themselves and just be like, well, you know, maybe I don't, because I think maybe people don't know what they're dealing with. And they don't.
No, they don't. Like, not really. They don't. I was in the camp of it being an undiscovered primate. Let me back up. My interest after the Patterson-Gimlin film, I had brief interest in it. It was decades later, after college, I moved to the Houston, Texas area from the West Coast, the land of fruits and nuts. I'm sorry, California is okay, but I wouldn't want to live there. I'll just put it that way. You know. So
anyway, I live there. It's a special place in my heart. Shout out to my previous Californians. All right, go ahead, Rick.
No, I get it. I'll be out there probably visiting family, you know, in the near future. I can visit. You know, I've been there. I understand it. It's just there's certain facets of it I'm not interested in. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave it at that. But I'd moved to the Houston area. Spent 20 plus years in public safety / law enforcement, retired, moved up to the Dallas area, got a little bit drier area, not the sauna of Houston. And my son and I were night fishing. Okay. It was not in, like, you know, the remote Pacific Northwest or way out in the middle of nowhere. There was development around it. And people have this, belief or assumption that these subjects aren't close to populated areas, okay? Mm-hmm. In reality, they're dumpster divers. They love landfills and easy pickings for food sources, okay? And if there's cover, concealment, and water supply in areas and areas where people don't normally venture, you're going to be very surprised how close they are to populated areas. So we were in a very remote area, northeast of the Dallas metro area. I had been out there at that time. My son was 15 years old, and we were hardcore fishermen. We were out there from about 8 till after. It was after midnight, maybe 1 or 2 o'clock. Had my pickup parked by the creek bank. Had a Coleman lantern on, lit, you know. It's not like a halogen light. I mean, you can see the chairs and trees and water, but to bait a hook, we used cap lights, you know, bright cap lights, baited our hook, and then threw it out in the water and set in the folding chairs. And we caught a few throwbacks, had a few bites, enough activity to keep two hardcore fishermen, you know, interested. And I remember at some point, I began to notice where we were parked, there was a side creek that ran in perpendicular to the main creek, you know, a little side slough, and we were on that little point there. So we had water to our right and in front of us, and then kind of an open area around the back, you know, kind of a parking area where a lot of fishermen hang out. So I'm sitting there in my folding chair, and I start noticing something across that side slough working its way towards us, maybe a rustle of leaves, a crackle, branch swishing, or, you know, just something over there moving around. Not worried at all. You have armadillo, coyotes, raccoons, you know, various night foraging animals. And so being honorably retired law enforcement, I had 357 in the truck, and I had a little pocket 380, you know, in my fishing. I had a little bit to protect myself, you know. And everything came down. So at some point, I got the distinct feeling of being watched. And at that point, I hear, if you take a branch above the ground and you snap it, the acoustics are different if it's on the ground and something heavy breaks it. It's got a muffled pop to it rather than the echoing snap. And I heard that muffled pop of a pretty good sized branch cracking from being stepped on. And I immediately, you know, I looked that way thinking, that's not an armadillo, that's not a coyote, or, you know, something over there. Maybe cattle, or maybe the horse is moving around over there, because there was livestock and horses nearby in some developed areas. So I'm thinking, well, maybe it's over there. And then I start getting the feeling of being watched, and very distinct. People often describe this. And so I just kind of casually got up. I put my pole in the chair and I walked over to my truck, and I got a Q-beam spotlight. And I just walked over there to the edge of the slough and was spotting the foliage, and it was thick undergrowth. I mean, to move through there would be very, very tenuous. I mean, it was thick stuff. Could you? Yeah, you could get through it, but not easily with the berry bushes and everything else. Mm-hmm. Progress would be very occluded. So anyway, I wasn't expecting to see anything, but as that bright circled light is panning through that thick bushes and trees and everything, I momentarily, and now it wasn't sticking out of the brush, but there's enough gaps in the foliage. It's not a straight wall that bright light penetrated into the foliage. And I momentarily caught a facial shape, not a snout, you know, or whatever. I caught a human facial shape, or human-like facial shape, but I was moving the spotlight so fast that when it registered in my brain, I'd already passed the spot. So I snapped the light back, and it was gone. It either recessed or dropped or whatever, but it wasn't where I momentarily noticed it. And my son saw mm-hmm. me kind of jerk, you know, and react, and he goes, "What are you doing, Dad?" Well, I didn't want to tell him, "Hey, I think there's somebody over there." You know, I didn't want to upset that 15-year-old. I just kind of nonchalantly said, "Oh, I'm just looking, you know, and then I turned the light off, put it in my truck and got back in my folding chair, knowing somebody would have to ford that water to get to us. Okay. So I wasn't worried about somebody surprising us. I thought, well, somebody's over there, maybe just, you know, pranking around or whatever. So I got back, picked up my pole. It wasn't more than 10 minutes, probably not less than five. I hear little activity, and I look back over, and in the dim Coleman lantern light, I see this object arcing up out of the foliage towards us, and it arcs down and hits the water about 5 feet in front of us, about like a 50-pound child doing a cannonball off the high dive. I'm not talking about a little splash. I'm talking about a poosh, you know what I mean? Water flying up in the air. I'm falling back in my folding chair and staggering to my feet. My son's already dropped his pole. He's latched onto me like a leech, screaming, "What was that? What was that?" You know, I'm watching these big waves fan out. All I knew in my mind, of course, I was thinking, "What was that?" But what I knew was it was a large object, very big, and the energy it had, if it had hit either one of us, it could have broke us up or killed us, you know? I mean, it would have busted bones at the very least. So I'm dragging him back, feeling very threatened, and I race over to my truck. I grab my .357 out, you know, from under the seat, and I yell out. I said, "That's not funny, you know?" I said, "If you throw something again, I've got a gun, and I just may shoot back. Don't throw anything, you know, don't throw anything else." And I get over to that side slough and about the area I saw that face. I'm mad. We're out on open public land, minding our own business, not breaking any laws, not trespassing. And I considered that a pretty serious threat, you know. And so with that in mind, there wasn't any development around. I went ahead and cocked my pistol back single action. I aimed it squarely down into the mud. And I turned away and I plugged one ear. I don't know if you've heard 357 without ear protection. It is an ear ringer. It's loud. So I fired around, you know, I fired around off into the mud. And on the other side, it sounded like a big elk, a big horse, something big and powerful take off at a high rate of speed, busting tree limbs and smashing bushes and taking off just like a baby bulldozer. And my jaw dropped. You know, it faded out. It didn't slow down. I looked over at my son. My son looked at me, goes, "Dad, what was that?" I said, "I don't know, but let's go." You know, so we left. And that, you know, my investigative side of me pondered. I'm an outdoorsman. I knew. Yeah, we've got bear in Texas, very rare, but there are bear in Texas. We have large cats. But the thing about these animals, Kristen, is their shoulder or their joint does not have the rotator cuff and the articulating abilities that our shoulders have. Yeah,
to they throw, can swat, right?
Exactly. Yeah. They can swat. They can move stuff. But to actually grasp with an opposing digit and throw would take something. And I don't know of any Olympian that could have thrown that thing. You know, I would estimate it was cinder block size.
Wow.
Big dirt clod, big chunk of concrete. It could have been anything. You know, it never came up. It didn't float, but it was large when it hit the water. And I shared that story with people for a while, and you get kind of, yeah, that's an interesting story. Do you have any idea what it could be? And they go, "No." But I knew what happened, and my son was with me. I didn't hallucinate it, you know. So pretty much my opinion of the outdoors didn't change much then. But it was a year or two later, I was just surfing the web, and I came across a thread that said fishermen attack at night. And I went, "Whoa, what's this?" And I double-clicked on it. It took me to the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, their website, BFRO. And I read the story, and it occurred just 100 miles west of this area in an area of Possum Kingdom Lake, North Texas. Mm-hmm. Their stories, or at least the details, were extremely close to what I had experienced. And they had a little area there to fill in a sighting report and send it in. Mm-hmm. And I did that, and I thought, you know, fat chance that I'm going to hear anything back. Well, lo and behold, about 2 or 3 days later, I get a call from a man that identifies himself as an investigator with the BFRO, and he would like to talk to me, which surprised me, first of all. Second, when I did phone him back, you know, we were just kind of shooting the breeze talking at first, and I could hear public safety radio traffic in the background, you know, and I just point blank asked him. I said, "Are you a law enforcement officer?" And he got quiet, and he goes, "Well, how did you know?" I said, "I could hear the radio traffic in the background." He goes, "Oh, I'm in the break room next to dispatch, you know." And he said, "The door's open," you know. But that to me, I was a little skeptical, you know. Oh, Bigfoot's supposed to be in the Pacific Northwest, you know, way out there. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I learned very quickly, there are quite a few places. I mean, the legend of Boggy Creek that scared the daylights out of me was filmed in Falcon, Arkansas. I mean, it was a B movie, mm-hmm. but it's very touching, you know, maybe in a, you know, an anguished way. I mean, it really gets your emotions cranked up, and they portray it very well, you know. So
it's incredibly spooky. It's and that specific movie, that specific story has affected so many people and shot them off into their own research and search for Sasquatch or these types of creatures or beings. Like that specific movie, I mean, it set the bar back then. Even back then, that movie was made in the 70s.
Yes.
But even back then, it just affected so many people when they were kids, and now later in their life, you know, so they're still following it. Absolutely.
And you know, the thing is, I started serious research. I met with that particular investigator. We went out to, I did research in the area of the rock throwing, but there was better foliage and cover in that same waterway system in another location. And from there, me and another guy had extended trips out there. We were followed, we were paralleled, had stuff thrown at us, and I eventually had my first visual sighting through binoculars at 150 yards. And I thought, everybody's going to believe me now. No. You know, you can tell somebody, I've seen it. You know, it was there. And instead of them going, "Really? They exist?" They kind of get that incredulous attitude.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, Kristen, because it's hard to wrap your mind around, how could something like that be in America and I've never seen it? I've been out in the woods, I've done this, I've done that. Well, look, I grew up out on the West Coast hunting, fishing, camping in some prime Bigfoot area, and I never heard or saw anything that would make me remotely believe that they existed. It was years later in another state, but knowing what I know now, very consistent interaction with them. And which is, you know, what I've shared with you on things. The big guy in the tree that I sent you, that clip of the subject in the tree, about mm-hmm. a 3-minute mm-hmm. video. We were in a land area. I was with some researchers, about a dozen people, very experienced people. There was nobody there that, "Oh, do Bigfoot exist?" Every person there had a story, you know, about their interaction with the big guys. And
Did you want to show this? If you want to set us up, like the story, and then we can show it.
Sure, okay. Sure.
All right.
I was there getting the feeling of being watched. This is a little, if you talk about mind speak and some paranormal aspects to big research, a lot of the researchers will diss you real quick, or they'll discount it. They don't want to hear it. They'll say, you don't want the woo. Look, there are credible witnesses that bring this to the table. And if you're truly following the scientific method of forensics, you consider all possibilities. You don't discount them due to expectation, bias, your preferences or opinions. You have to consider it. So a lot of those self-professed experts haven't had the training, education, and experience to really qualify them to conduct a thorough investigation. They're kind of, they learned it by guess and by golly. They weren't taught it by other experienced people, you know, or preceptors or whatever. So anyway, I got that feeling of being watched, and I kind of got away from the distractions of the people, and I was scanning around areas of wooded, you know, points up on ridge up on the hill, and I just said this to myself. I said, "Okay, big boy, I can feel you watching me. Where are you?" Okay. At that point in my head now, in my head, and people say, well, is it English or how is that? Look, it's an experience-based thought, okay, that is very clear, and I believe it's a primal ability that we all had at one time, and occasionally people can use it or have experience with it, but it was a here I am, okay, and then a call sounded up on the ridge. There's no way I would have picked anything out 508 yards away, you know? And so I looked up there and I saw the dark shape up in the trees. I grabbed a real expensive rig. But it's 538 yards by GPS waypoints. And you being in the film industry kind of understand, I guess, lenses you have to pull in something from way far away. Clearly, we're talking all I had was a little binocular and an RCA small wonder, but I put the small wonder on a tripod. I zoomed it in and I put the little binocular on 30 power and I held over the front lens of the binocular and I got a fairly decent, you know, view of this guy. But you got to understand, I didn't have my reading glasses on. And all I'm looking at is a little 1x1 LED screen. So you can hear me saying that, I think that Joker's moving. Well, I'm not seeing it as big and as clear as you see it on you know, this screen. But I was seeing it clear enough. I knew it was something up there in the trees. But that's the lead in to it.
The setup for the video. Okay. All right. Let's show that now.
Yeah. I don't know if it's anything. It's a dark shape up there in the trees.
Do you see the deer stand?
Yep.
How far? Which direction from the deer stand?
If you go from the deer stand, same height, about 20 degrees to your right. There's a dark spot between the trees up there. Okay, if you put the binoculars down. Joker looks like it's moving. I'll be able to see it in the video. I'm thinking there's something up in the trees. See that? Go down the hill. You see that one tree that's kind of leaning? There's a bunch of them are straight, and if you
it's a small one.
Yeah, a small one up close to us. Go over another 20 feet from there. See that dark spot between the trees up there? Go back up in the trees. I don't know if it's moving or not, but I got a pretty good look at it. I got a good video of it. If it moves, I've got it. It looks like it's moving, but I don't know. Got some pretty good video. Yeah, I'm getting decent video. Video of what I'd taken earlier. was there.
That particular location, a DNA sample was obtained. I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
It was processed, but in the science industry or the established science, don't want to believe we've got a hybrid human dwelling in the forested lands. I don't know what the payoff is. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I've had personal experience with certain agencies of our government. And number one, I feel they know they exist. And number two, they deliberately try to discourage, you know, or work against any. And I won't get into that. I've got a ton of stories there. I just want to talk about the Bigfoot facet side of things. But the DNA that was obtained there show that we're dealing with a hybrid human, not an ape.
Okay. What kind of DNA, what was the sample? Was it hair? Was it blood?
I was not privy to the people that obtained it. I was watching this subject from two ridges over. The next week I was out there with that. At that point, he was an ex-federal officer. He'd gone on to other things. I had to have him walk up the ridge, and we had walkie-talkies. If I tried to walk it myself, you go down into a sump, you lose your reference points. You come back up, everything looks different. There's no way you could walk over two ridges and get the spot. So I had to walk up the road with walkie-talkies. No, further over. Okay, yeah, right there. He says, Rick, you got to come up here and look at this. Okay. So we came up there and saw the trees that they were sitting in. I don't know if I sent you pictures of those or not, the trees in the ridgeline.
I don't think I got the pictures for those, but I'll take a look. You keep talking. I'll take a look.
So he went back there later with another. I won't mention their name. If I mention the name, you'd know who I was talking about. But they're known in the industry, and they obtained stuff. And anyway, I wasn't a part of that. I really don't. You know, Kristen, I don't care if anybody believes it or not. You know, proving it to the skeptic is not my passion. I just enjoy sharing. I've been really, some people may think cursed, but blessed with some experiences. I can just tell you I've had multiple Class A sightings, and I've been able to watch these subjects. And on a couple of occasions, conversed with them. I was in Kentucky. Again, I'm a mixed blood tribal member, full blood grandmother, mixed blood grandfather. The Cherokee, and there's several names that the Native nations have, a lot of names, but the Cherokee have several stories of Salk Lou, Slant-Eyed Giant, the Giant of Jakula Rock, in a big inscription, one of the oldest, you know, carved rocks in the nation, you know, in America. A very sacred place for the Cherokee. But coming from elders and historians through Larry Shade, historian and storyteller for the Cherokee Nation, they called them the Uni Udawahi, okay? Loosely translated, forced beings of the lost or forgotten tribe. They don't equate them to an animal. And if you go to most of your Native Nation history and information, they don't equate these. They equate them to a tribe or a clan of people, which, by the way, the book, I sent you the cover to my book. I relate my early experiences and what I've learned from them. And I call them the forest people. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not mm-hmm. a dumb animal. I was in Kentucky with Charlie Raymond. I've got the KBRO T-shirt on. Charlie Raymond, he runs the Kentucky Bigfoot Research Organization. Great guy. His lovely wife Lindsay. They both do a great job. If anybody ever wants experience, sign up for one of those expeditions. It's a big camping area, food, very, very engaging environment. So I've made probably four or five of them and have had stuff happen every time I go. But I was there, I want to say 2 years ago. I'd have to look at my records. Again, I don't have all the notes in front of me, but I was there and we had walked down a long road, one way in, one way out, in remote central Kentucky. Saw a night fisherman down by the river fishing by himself. We went a mile or two past that to the dead end. Is there a chance somebody could be just hanging out back there? Yeah, but not likely. You know, it was tough getting in there. So I'm sitting there, and one of the guys brought an acoustical guitar, did great stuff, even some oldies and goodies and Stevie Ray Vaughan and stuff, carried a great rhythm. They sang, you know. And those big guys like that kind of stuff. If you're out there banging on trees, putting up camera traps and trying to herd, bait, or switch them, you're not. They're going to run you a little ragged. They may engage you a little bit, but they're not interested in that. But if you're out there having fun, people are laughing, there's music, they're going to come watch and see. They're very curious. It's an Achilles heel with them. They want to know what's going on in their neck of the woods, you know? So I start getting that feeling of being watched. And so I ease away kind of discreetly away from the group. I use the red game cap light because it's almost pitch black out there once you get away from the fire. And I get down there and my interest is drawn towards the river down there across a open field. And I go to scanning it. In very little time, Kristen, I notice tall, upright, bipedal shapes walking around in the foliage down there, stopping, going to another gap, looking, and they were just moving around down there, what I considered watching us. And they showed no clothing lines. Later, I got a good enhancement of my thermal video. And the head level on this distinctive fork in the tree was about 9 feet tall. Okay. So this is between eight to 10 feet tall, upright, with no clothing, not showing any distinctive clothing lines. Could it have been a naked NBA basketball player out there in the middle of nowhere without the flashlight? Not impossible, Kristen, but not likely. You know, I mean, it wasn't like anybody knew we were. And I've had that happen many times, you know, where I've engaged in stuff like that. Well, Kentucky is the land of the Cherokee, my ancestors. They were there for thousands of years. The Uni Udawahi, they would leave out edible roots and berries for the big guys. And in turn, the big guys would watch over them during hunting and gathering endeavors, a symbiote relationship, not predatory. So if that went on there for thousands of years, it only makes sense that they might understand Cherokee. If they interacted with them, they obviously would have picked it up. So I was sitting there watching this subject, and one of the paranormal researchers, he was there for the first time on a Bigfoot expedition, he walks over to me, and he says, "Rick, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm watching a big guy down by the river." He goes, "Really?" He said, "Man, I wished I could." I said, "Hey, come here, come here." You know, of course, he's got his game cap light on. It's dark, you know. I give him my thermal scope, and I said, "Okay." And I got him standing next to me. I said, "Look at 11 o'clock position across the field down there in the tree line." So he's quiet for about a minute. I don't say anything. I'm just kind of standing there. Finally, I ask him, I said, "Hey, do you see anything?" He goes, "Yeah." He's peeking around the tree looking at us. I can see his tail and his shoulder. Kristen, that made the whole trip worth it. I mean, yeah. I get a kick when I get out in the field and I see somebody turn to me with wide eyes going, "There's something out there." And it's like, duh. You know? But I enjoy that. I like the epiphany moment that people have on that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I enjoy it. Yeah. So.
Well, and what I found interesting too, you sent me some stuff and I did look and I don't think I've got any pictures of the fella in the tree, but in the videos that you sent, you're not just capturing the big guy on camera. You're capturing some other stuff too that's a little intriguing. The bubblehead. The one you sent me most recently, because that one I was watching, I was like, I see it, like the one crawling. I won't give it anything away. I was like, I was wondering if we could. Yeah. Could you talk about this part of? I'm very interested to talk to you and ask you about, because I know that your investigations have led you to what you currently know, that there is some weird stuff going on there that you know, a lot of people would term woo. I'm from a paranormal background, baby. Like I am open to it. I want to hear about this side of it too. So let me just pull up this guy and let me see if I can situate us around it here. Hold on.
Oh yes. Kind of give you a lead in on this. I was in the Daniel Boone National Forest with a BFRO group. We had walked a long way down what was supposed to be a fire access road. It was more like a rugged, washed out trail than a road. But we had taken a break, and again, near pitch dark, we had lined out down the road on both sides. There was probably 8 or 10 of us. And one of the ladies next to me had a parabolic mic. You know, she had the headphones and she's like what you see at NFL games where the guy's holding the parabolic mic and they're scanning. You know, they get sound. They can get talking in the huddle. So she's scanning and she goes, "Rick, I'm hearing noises off to my left." And I said, "Where?" Because she's standing, you know, maybe half dozen steps away. She goes, "About 45 degree angle to my left," which then I can kind of equate to where to look with my thermal. Now, you got to understand, Kristen, I was in what they call black hot mode. That's my favorite color palette. Enamel, any tree, any rock, anything holding heat will show up a very distinctive black or dark gray. Anything cold will be light. And the thing about this subject, Kristen, is they're showing up cold, not hot. And I'm looking for a big bruiser peeking around a tree. I'm not looking at the base of the trees at first. So I miss them crawling around the back of the tree to hide, because I'm being, you know, they know they're conspicuous. They're trying to be discreet. But then they come back out, and that's later in that video where I start clicking the color palettes going, "What am I looking at?" But this little spider-looking walking thing is the same thing I saw in the other video or similar that you can show that with the night vision. These little alien-looking things, you know, in the woods. But now, if you want to go ahead and play the video, just the narrated or at least the caption video.
See if it'll show up on my side. If not, I will dub it in afterwards.
All right. Yes, I see it. Then I pan further to my right, and I don't see it hiding. Mm-hmm. Here I'll pan just after this caption. I'll pan further to my right. There it is at the base of that tree, and he's scooting around the back side of it. So later, I'm still standing there. We're resting, and I finally see it, and I'm thinking, you know, as it starts moving, you know, because it was cold, and I'm changing the palette, trying to figure. You can see it moving its left arm, what it's reaching for, but it's kind of in some vegetation. It's not that big. Bubble head, you know, that at the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's very strange looking. Very strange looking. You but, know, yeah. Once you see it,
yeah, and
let's
you
see.
Know.
So was this years... was?
Go ahead.
Oh, I think we got a little delay. Sorry about that. Was that that one that we just watched? Was that the same location as the green screen one that you sent me with the green?
Oh, no. That was in southern Missouri, Daniel Boone National Forest. The green screen was near Boggy Depot in Oklahoma, probably the better part 700 or 800 miles apart and 5 years apart. Two different states, two different areas, two different times. Where, what are the chances of that being random if there is not subjects like that? Well, let me back up, Chris. In my research, I've learned there's a whole lot out in the woods that people don't have a clue to, okay, that exists out there. I'm not, you know, not believing any and everything, but there's stuff out there I don't understand. I'll just leave it at that. Don't have any. Oh, I could tell you a few stories that raise a hair on the back of your head, but I'm not going to go there here, okay? I'm not going to go there here. I want to leave it a little bit light.
If you got time today, join me on Patreon, and we'll talk about some of the crazy stuff. So we are creeping up on the hour here. I would love to get just a couple, just maybe another video in and talk about some of the pictures here, just a couple of them.
How about
because I want to show folks the evidence.
Okay,
the green one.
Good deal. The green one where the one's peeking out from the tree right in front of me. He's like,
okay,
they're less than 20 feet away. I was looking, right. My interest was on the big female, which we think was a female. She's back behind all of this foliage, closer to the creek. And that's where my interest was drawn, you know. But these little bubble-headed things were out.
Okay, yeah, so we can show the video.
Sure.
And then, well, you have photos, too, that came along with it so that we can kind of point that out to folks here on the screen. That'll be awesome. So I'll play the video first, and then I'll pull up those photos.
Okay. All right. I'm panning to my left. You can see the ATVs, but look at the one peeking out from the tree to my far left. You can see his eyeball, his shoulder, and there's two more right there on the ATVs. And then if you'll look as I pan back, and I shorten this, head's in the vegetation there. Straight ahead, you can see head and shoulders. You can see about 4 or 5 heads and shoulders in the vegetation across the way there, you know.
Yeah, it makes it a little easier. Folks did not catch that. Let's see here. Yeah, let me see if this is the
This is the photo. Yep, this is a different night vision, but this subject, and there's something to their left. I don't know what that is, but they have this light emitting binocular looking stuff that they're holding up to their face. And I saw the light when I was taking this video. I thought it was fireflies at first, you know. There, if people can't see the little two arms and stuff, yeah, there, that was the one of the two sitting on the ATV. That particular Gen 1 screen had telephoto. The other one did not have telephoto. It had better resolution because it was a Gen 3 scope that I was videoing from there, the one peeking around the tree. I sent you the two of the enhanced, look like a female to me.
That's the dark picture.
Yes, that you can see their left arm and hand kind of curling back behind the tree. You can see from about knee high up, because this is a hill that's going down to the creek. They're standing down the hill a ways, but you can actually see what appears to be mammary glands on this subject.
Yeah,
you know?
Let's pull up the there we go. Just for folks so that they can see what we're talking about here.
That's the lighter resolution. That you can see their eyes. They're looking towards me, very much in cover. But this subject was behind the little green, the little bubble-headed subjects. I didn't send you the video. There were delta-shaped lights hovering over the trees at another point in time when we were out here. And I can't tell you their size. I don't know if they were small, low, or they were big, very up high. But they seemed to try to maneuver behind trees. When I noticed them, they were aware and were trying to avoid me detecting them. You know, I mean, I didn't send you that video, but I can. You know, I'm kind of freaking out. I'm going, there's lights, you know.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people do, like you were saying earlier in the show, a lot of people do report seeing orbs and UFOs and just kind of strange anomalous things. Do you feel like that kind of stuff, like, is that being suppressed? Or are folks just not reporting it because they feel weird about it? Do you think it's actively being suppressed by Bigfoot organizations, people in the field?
Yes, I do, because it's hard for people to accept the fact that these subjects exist in the first place. But then you add this other way out, you know, what they term woo or, you know, paranormal. I did send, and we didn't get into it, one of the howler. He's coming up through a ravine. Kristen, he covered 200 yards in about 20 seconds, okay? And he
Wow.
knew I was up on the ridge. And we're not talking a flat sprint, you know, football field. We're talking a rugged ravine to move that fast. What's the world record for the 100-yard dash? Somewhere around 10 seconds. I mean,
Yeah.
not humanly possible, but you can see me panning, following the progress of that voice doing the whoop, you know, I mean, he knew I was up there, you know, and everything. We can get into all that later, but I'll send you some more
Yeah.
stuff. I've got plenty of
Yeah,
stuff.
please
So,
do. Yeah, I have to, after we cut here, I would please send me anything that you want. I'm very, very curious about, especially like 'cause you've captured all of this too, like this evidence, and I'm hungry for it, Rick. Hungry.
sure.
But yeah,
I'm
we
just
are
glad
here
for
at
the.
the hour here.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm so sorry about the delay, but before we cut, I want to give you an opportunity. I know you've got an appearance coming up here later in the year at the 3rd annual Ozark Mountain Bigfoot Convention
Yes, ma'am.
conference. You're
Yes.
speaking at that one. Are
Yes.
there what tell us a little bit about that real quick, and then any other appearances you've got coming up that you want to direct attention on.
Well, the Ozark Mountain, I was there last year, got great stuff. They wanted me to speak this year. I've got stuff I haven't publicly presented at all, you know. If anybody's remotely interested in it, you know, it's going to be a great venue. 28th of September in Springfield, Missouri. I'm looking forward to it with great anticipation. But I just, you know, I want to say all the anybody Cherokee descent, Osceola, Dohejoo, you know, hello folks, how are you? And I'm not fluent, but I know enough Cherokee to get in trouble. But I love using the language of my grandmother. It was her first language, and I'm proud of that. But again, like I said, Kristen, I'm equal out of Scots, Irish, Dutch, and German. It's who I am. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. I have a passion for that,
Oh,
if you didn't
gosh,
know
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
But yeah.
a little bit, Rick. No, this was awesome. And yeah, I thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
Rick Taylor, everybody. Yes, thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to Richard for appearing on the show. Learn more about my guest and take a look through his video and photo evidence at the links below. If you enjoyed today's guest, touch base with him and let him know what you loved so much. And if you liked hearing about the stranger side of Sasquatch, stay tuned. The end of the season is approaching rapidly, but before that happens, I will be taking a solo deep dive into that side of the story. I have focused primarily this season on the undiscovered biological animal that many believe is the case. But as I told Rick, you know, I've got paranormal in my blood. It's in my bones. You didn't actually think we were never going to talk about it, did you? Of course you didn't. You know me too well. Follow the show, good people, at Paranorm Girl Pod on social. Check me out over on YouTube. Folks who caught this one over there got to enjoy seeing the evidence that we discussed on today's program. And you can too. Subscribe, like, comment, and hit the notification bell. The PGP channel is also where you will find those monthly beer, booze, and boogeymen live streams. That's all for today. Next week, we are taking a skeptical turn. We're going to be digging into Bigfoot hoaxes. It's all the rage. Everybody's doing it. or so I have heard. See you guys on Tuesday. Until then, stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.